Ahoy, Mets fans. Welcome to Amazing Avenue in Conversation. My name is Brian Salvatore, and tonight, myself and Chris McShane are joined by our old friend Mark Carrig, currently of The Athletic. And so without any further ado, take it away, Chris.
For joining us this week on Amazing Avenue in Conversation, as somebody who's had a few conversations with us over the years, you know him from his time as a Mets beat writer. He left the Mets beat when he joined The Athletic for the Yankees beat over the last year, and then The Athletic has since made him a national baseball writer. And based on his work, you know, and everything we've known about him in his time writing about the Mets, there's really nobody more deserving of that. So without further ado, Mark Carrig, thanks for coming on with Brian and me tonight.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, we're sorry we couldn't get the Green Man here, but he is no longer Amazing Avenue official, so, you know, we have to make do without him.
I can't believe it. Like, we're like 2 seconds into what I think is going to be a lovely conversation. You bring up the Green Man.
Someday wow. We will get you guys in the same place in person.
Dude, breaking. We have been in the same place.
Yeah?
We were in the Royals press box. I want to say last year. Yeah.
Did you guys talk? Was it a meeting of the minds?
Yeah. Yeah, I was very underwhelmed, to be honest, but that's okay. You know, like, so yeah, we did meet, we did talk. No, it was cool, actually. It turns out that Green Man lived like 2 towns over this whole time, which is hilarious. he's not actually green, which he says. But yeah, we did meet. It was so random. Like, I remember that now. It was like the most random afternoon ever because Johnny Damon happened to be at the park that day for something. And he, you know, obviously played there. So I was sitting there writing, and then like Johnny called my name out as he was walking through a hallway because he saw a couple of guys that had covered him with the Yankees back in the day. And then like a minute after that, Green Man comes walking up. So yeah, it was like a very random afternoon in Kansas City, but we have met.
Nice. We're going deep into the Amazing Avenue lore here.
Oh yeah, Johnny Damon and the Green Man. That's
oh my god,
it's yep. Like a 50s band name. So I guess for folks who aren't familiar, and if they're not familiar, we are off to a great start. But for folks who aren't familiar, you know, you've been writing about baseball for a decent amount of time now. You know, how did you get into it? And, you know, what were the things that happened along the way that were significant, you know, from starting at Newsday to, you know, the point you're at now with The Athletic? You know, what kind of big moments stood out in terms of getting to that point?
Well, let's see. I kind of knew I wanted to cover baseball for a long time, but that's not necessarily something you can just go do. You've got to sort of work your way up to it and, you know, prove that you can be, you know, dependent upon, because when you're covering a baseball team for a newspaper, they're spending a lot of money to send you on the road. They are putting their reputation on the line because they've got to trust your reporting. You've got to show that you can deal with people and deal with situations, because again, everything that you do for the paper is representing them. So, you know, there's also that component that they're paying for you to travel with the team. Okay. And this is a massive investment. And I feel like so many times when, you know, the business gets talked about, that doesn't get discussed. And it's why you can't just pick someone, you know, out of a lineup and just throw them into a gig like this, because it seems like if you're at the newspaper, you're a news organization, there's a lot that you're pouring into it, and you've got to know that the person that you're pouring all of those resources into has proven and demonstrated over time that they're going to, you know, write a story every day, be able to come up with something every day, and be able to develop relationships that lead to stories that only, you know, that person can get. So it's a lot. And so you know, I spent a lot of time early in my career doing that, you know, and so you, and this is a long time ago now, so it doesn't quite work this way, like specifically, but the general idea holds, right? You're, you know, I started covering high school sports. The first job was answering phones in the sports department of my local paper and taking Agate, which is the tiny little box scores, you know, for high school sports. So, you know, and then sort of it went from there. I covered college basketball and college football for a couple of years. My editors at the time, I was working at the Washington Post then, they knew that I wanted to cover baseball. And so we had an opening come up, the Baltimore Orioles beat. That was in 2008. And an editor who had been really good to me there, Tracy Hamilton, asked me one day if I wanted to cover baseball. This sounded good to me, and I couldn't sign up faster because, like I said, it had always been sort of the goal. So, you know, it went from there. Covered the Orioles, and then actually moved up to New York to cover the Yankees for the Star-Ledger, which is based in Jersey. I was there for 5 years, and then Newsday gave me an opportunity to cover the Mets late in 2012. You know, and spent 5 years on the beat there and had an awesome time doing it. And I think we've discussed this before. This fan base is fun to write for because they care so deeply about their team. And it felt like I had a mission every day that I went to work, that I was trying to serve those people. And I was lucky enough to have this badge around my neck that let me into the clubhouse. And I wanted to be people's eyes and ears. So it was wonderful. I really enjoyed it. And then ended up at The Athletic when they started up and went back to the Yankees, which I'd covered before. And then here we are. So you asked, like, what were all the big things? Like, I would say all of that was big. Every stop prepared me for the next one. And I think every stop helped me get better and, you know, maybe brought out some parts of like my work that I needed to improve upon. And so the next stop was always that place where I did that. And yeah, so I guess just getting experience and sort of earning trust and doing it a couple of times in baseball really helped me out. Like all of that stuff was big for me.
Now, obviously, you know, being on the national scene is a great honor. And it means that, you know, people really care about what you're writing and that you're doing a good job. But do you ever feel like you do lose something on the national beat? You know, you mentioned the connection with the Mets fan base and how passionate they were. Do you find that writing for a more general audience means that you, I don't know how to put this, you know, how much does that change your job? How much is writing for the national audience more of writing generally versus the specificity that comes with writing for the beat?
Yeah, it's totally different. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of things that I miss about the beat. You know, I guess we'll start with the beat itself. Like, first of all, man, it's hard. Okay. Like think about being away from your family. Like the players talk about this, but when you're covering a team and in New York, the people that are covering beats here, they pretty much do it the way they've done it for the last 100 years or whatever. You know, you travel and you, the team's away, you're away, right? There's 7 weeks of spring training, you're there for almost all of it. You know, when the home games, like that's when you kind of get your breaks, but you're still covering like 50 of the 81. And then if your team makes the playoffs, there's, you know, another month basically where you have no idea when you're coming home. That's a lot of work and it's a great job and you're not going to hear people whine about it really. I know people give some writers a hard time on Twitter when they do now and again, but you know, frankly, I don't think they complain about it as much as they could having lived that life. Like, and I know that most of them feel really lucky to be there. All right. I mean, it's a lot. So, you know, as much of a grind as it is, though, there's something really special about it. And we talked about one of those things already. You do develop a connection with the people that you're writing for. And I think it's great. You know, it's funny. I think broadcasters have always had that. right? Gary, Keith, and Ron to Met fans, like, you don't need last names. Like, you already know who those people are. Howie is the same way. You know, Wayne will be the same way. He already gotten himself in there, you know, in the booth and made a name that way. Like, I mean, you know, Bob Murphy, like, these people became a part of the experience. But I think in the last, you know, 10, 15 years or whatever it's been, with social media, the writers become part of that too, which I never saw coming. But in a way, it's sort of that way now. You know, I realized kind of early on as a beat writer, and this is when the social media part of it started to take off, that, hey, you know, like, there are people watching this game and they've got their phone out and they're curious about what you've got to say. And that's really not that all that different from broadcasters. So I feel like over time, being on a beat, you kind of get folded into that. And I certainly felt it with the Mets, for sure. It, again, because people pay attention to their team on that side of town, and they do it with passion. So, you know, I mean, look, Yankee fans do it too, and that was cool to experience that. But just, I think being on a beat in general in this day and age, when you're traveling, you're on the team as much as you are, and with social media, I think you do end up getting kind of lumped into the whole experience. So, yeah, being a national writer changes that. And I haven't even, you know, like, I haven't been in the job that long, and I'm still figuring things out. And frankly, like, you know, I wish I knew what I was doing more. You know, it's all new to me. But I do know that on the beat, you know, you do get comfortable because you're around it all the time. And I think you end up feeling like you're part of, like, the experience in a lot of ways, because with social media, you know, your voice ends up becoming something that people pay attention to. And so in a way, like, that was an honor, and I'll miss that. You know, it became one of my favorite parts of being on the beat, aside from, like, obviously the camaraderie too, which I think kind of comes across on social media to some folks. Like, you see those other writers more than your own family for a large part of the year. And it's really nice when you actually get along with those folks. And for most of my time on the Mets beat, like, I can say for most of the people I was around every day, I really got along with them. So that made it fun. And I think I'll miss that part of it as well, because that's very different from beat or from a national job. So, you know, but I think the biggest thing is I'll also miss having a clubhouse that I kind of, like, got to know well, and that I was around, and where they knew me and I knew them. And, you know, when you're around long enough, you're just part of the furniture. And I think that's where the best stories come out, because you're seeing these things every day, and you're seeing all the small things, and, you know, you've built relationships. And, you know, when you're a national writer, like, you don't have that one room that you're in charge of kind of being around, as you are on the beat. So that's a huge difference. And, you know, honestly, still trying to learn how to do this job without that. But yeah, it's very different. It's cool. It's exciting. I'm honored that they've given me a chance to do those things. But yeah, there's really nothing quite the same as working a beat in baseball, and really in any sport, because baseball's access is so good that beat writing on baseball is, you know, kind of what journalism was back in the day, when a lot of parts of it, you know, were, I think, the fun parts of the business. You know, being around all the time is fun, and I think it leads to better stories.
Yeah, I think all of that definitely makes sense. And to your point on, you know, missing the beat and the familiarity you get and the camaraderie, I think one of the pieces that you wrote that published fairly recently, it comes to mind is like a good example of not just that it's good reporting and good writing and all of that, which it is, but the story about the belt that Major League Baseball was, you know, is handed out to teams for, you know, minimizing salaries and arbitration, you know, each year. That story reads to me, not that, like, if you had all of that you couldn't have written it being on a beat, but it does seem like that's sort of like the liberating part, you know, I don't have to squeeze this into, you know, how does this relate to the Mets? How does this relate to the Yankees? You know, does that seem in the early going like it's like that's the good side of the trade-off, that you can look at these macro issues and, you know, if nobody on the Mets says anything interesting, it doesn't matter because you can still get a story?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I think that there's a lot of great things about it. That's one of them. It's so cool that I've got editors that are basically like, hey, if you're interested in that, go do it. And you know, like that's more or less sort of what I'm doing. And it's incredible. I think as a reporter and someone who, you know, got into the business to tell stories, to have that mandate is really amazing. So yeah, it's really like that's sort of the new job. It's, you know, instead of one room, you have a larger one, right? It's like the entire game, macro issues, as you said, like, or if just something captures your curiosity or you're interested in something or somebody, that you've got the freedom to go and, you know, try to write a story about that person in your own way. So, that's been great. Honestly, the other thing is this feels to me like less of a job change in a way and more of a life change in so many respects, because when you're on the beat, as we talked about, you're traveling a lot. That's a lot of sacrifice, and that's what you do because that's the job. You're trying to do a good job. But, you know, doing this role has allowed me to stay home a lot more. And being home, the timing couldn't be better. My daughter's 13 months old, almost 14 months old now. Like, it's been really cool to be around her. I remember last year, I would go on the road, and sometimes those road trips are like 2 weeks long. And, you know, some people out there know this, right? You've had young kids. Like, 1 week when you're less than a year old is huge. 2 weeks is like an eternity. So I remember coming back from trips and seeing my daughter, and she'd do something, and I'd be like, when did that start? Or she would just be noticeably bigger, you know? And you're just like, wow, like, I don't want to miss out on all of that. So I remember thinking to myself, boy, it would be nice at some point to be able to still cover baseball and try to do it well, but also do it in a way where, you know, maybe I don't have to be away from home as much. So I feel doubly lucky because this came about, right, you know, after the season, and I'd been having those thoughts. So, like, that's kind of a cool part of this, too, is not only do I get to sort of explore bigger issues, that, and they don't have to be contained to New York, as you were saying earlier, but I don't know, I think I get to do something I really love to do while also still trying to be, you know, home more, to be a good father and to be a good husband and to have some kind of balance, like, you know, which I think a lot of people are shooting for. So I think the biggest thing is that, like, I got really lucky, and, you know, maybe this helps with some balance, and that's great too.
Hey, listeners, this is Luke Thomas, show host at MMA Fighting. If you like mixed martial arts and combat sports, you should check out our weekly show, The MMA Hour. Each Monday, we speak with the top athletes of MMA, from world champions to rising stars. We also bring you in-depth analysis on technique in our Monday morning analyst segment, where we talk to some of the brightest minds in the game. Plus, we answer your questions regarding the latest news and headlines of the world of professional fighting. Find us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seems Smart. It Seems Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out, and if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.
So, you know, looking at the macro picture of baseball right now, what's exciting you right now? What's great about Major League Baseball as of mid-April 2019? What's something our listeners should be definitely keeping abreast of if they're maybe not as tuned into the larger game?
You know what? Like, I just think the talent level overall, especially the young talent, is so off the charts and good that you can flip on a game any night, and if it's not the Mets or whomever or the Yankees or whoever you root for, you know, Mets, obviously, on this podcast. But, like, you know, you can flip on pretty much every game and see somebody who's worth watching closely. And I think it's great. I mean, it's honestly, that's been one of the cool parts of the change in the job, too, is that funny. When you work for a newspaper and you cover a team, like, a lot of times you don't get to watch as much baseball as you probably want to. There's just so much stuff going on, so many things you've got to keep tabs on, so many calls to make and things to write that sometimes you end up just not watching as much baseball as you want to watch. So this has allowed me to watch a lot of baseball. And first of all, I forgot how much fun that is, honestly, because I like getting surprised. And, you know, like, you see these players that you really don't get to watch all that much, and, like, they'll do something on the field that surprises you, and you're just like, wow, that's pretty great. And you know, there's just so many talented guys. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, you there's that commercial now with the guys in that press conference, and it's a little cheesy, right? But, like, I think it's a great attitude and idea to let the kids play, because they're really that good. And I don't know, I think it was a few years ago, and Noah Syndergaard pitching the game, and he threw 101 mile an hour fastball or something, and then hit a ball 425 feet for a homer in the same game. Remember that? Like, I mean, did it within like three innings. And I remember like thinking, oh my God. Like literally seeing things that have just never happened before. And I think what we're seeing in the game now is we've been talking all these years about analytics and metrics and how that informs how things get done. And I feel like we're starting to see a generation of players who have been developed with those things in mind, or at least helping to guide it. And, you know, I think that's pretty exciting to me. You know, you see these brand new ideas that years ago would have just been dismissed or ruled out, and they influence the game, whether it's the types of coaches that are coming into baseball, or, you know, how players prepare, or the resources that they use to get themselves to another level. It's not just working with the guys on the team, right? There's this whole infrastructure out there of smart people that have decided that it is a worthwhile cause to be better at baseball. And I think it's really cool to watch the product of that. Now, the style of it, right? Like, there's a good argument to, you know, with the style of baseball kind of being off-putting to some people, right? A lot of swings and misses, not enough action and all that stuff. But when I still think the talent level overwhelms all of those quibbles. So to me, the thing that is cool about baseball is just how many great young players there seem to be all over the place. And it's not even the usual suspects, right? Like, it's like some middle reliever that you didn't know very well or had barely heard of, and you watch him go out there and then do something crazy. So, like, Reyes Moronta or something, like, you know, some of the Giants, like, guys like that are like, holy cow. You know, didn't really know much about him, but here he is, like, you know, dealing and doing crazy things where the hitters look like they're overmatched sometimes. It's kind of remarkable that way.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I think fans have seen that, whether they've watched their own team or, you know, watched a bunch of other teams on MLB TV, or even if their involvement is through fantasy baseball, you know, there's new names out there that are just doing things constantly that jump off the page. And yeah, it just makes for a very exciting time. And I think the conversation so often still gets kind of bogged down in, oh, analytics, you know, and doesn't focus enough on like, wow, can you believe what these guys are doing? You know, Jeff Bagwell in his MVP season, you know, the strike shortened season 94, put up numbers. And not that tons of guys are matching that kind of hitting on a year in and year out basis, but there's like a bunch of guys in the game who can hit like that for a season or at least a few months. You know, that's crazy. And at the same time, you know, pitchers are better than ever and doing things. So, yeah, it's I don't know. It's a good time to be into baseball. And I think specific to the Mets, you know, sort of the old versus the new, you know, the things you've written recently have touched on that. Travis d'Arnaud, you know, coming back, being sort of a, you know, the last, not the last player, but the last major leaguer, you know, who came in under Alderson and really had his best years under him. You know, Mickey Callaway being among the several managers who were new to the gig last year and, you know, how what that was like for all of them. And Brody Van Wagenen coming in, I don't know if he's still doing it, but it sounded like he was going to. But, you know, coming into this new job and deciding he's going to read the replies on Twitter. You know, all of that, it's been sort of a fragmented changing of the guard with the Mets. Obviously, you know, Omar Minaya comes back into the picture as Alderson is sort of, you know, finishing up his tenure. Van Wagenen comes in as the new GM a season after Callaway comes in. So I guess, you know, I know you weren't around them every day last year. And, you know, this role doesn't put you in the clubhouse in the way that you were there before. But from your perspective, you know, what does this Mets team feel like right now?
You know, I think, first of all, I think they're interesting. I think they're intriguing. I was having this conversation with a couple other writers the other day, and we were talking about this idea of volatile teams, where, you know, in our conversation, that would be that team where if they won 75 games or if they won 93, you'd be equally not surprised at either, right? So we're thinking, all right, what teams are those? And the Mets were one of them. You know, and maybe people will disagree with that, and you know, but in my mind, it was like, huh, that actually makes sense. Like, you can see scenarios in which this team could be either of those things. And, but I think there's excitement that comes with that, because especially at this time of year, I think most folks are still dreaming about the high side of things. And the high side of things for this team could be emerging from really an entertaining dogfight in the NL East. And so there's a cool energy over there right now. I think I've sensed it from the time that I've been in the clubhouse a little bit, like in the spring and so far this season, and just sort of talking to people that I still know over there and have for a while. You know, there's something exciting going on. I think some change has sort of brought some of that feeling. But another thought I've heard a lot is, hey, let's just see what happens, right? Like, I think it actually mirrors a lot of fans are kind of going through right now. You see Brody make all those moves, and some of them are splashy. He's clearly different from Sandy. The feel is different. As you referenced, you know, he's talking about reading comments on Twitter. Like, he's been out there. Like, I mean, he's still been out there. He's on the field. He's with the media. He's, you know, doing little things like, you know, being available and being out front. It's very different. But I think there's also a sense of like, all right, let's see how that plays. You know, like, what happens? How does he behave right when, you know, the Mets hit a tough skid? Are you as available then? You know, are you out front then? Are you still reading the comments if things go south and there's a rough patch. So, yeah, I think my sense over there is there's a little bit of that, okay, let's see how this goes, sort of a cautious optimism to it, jury's still out sort of thing. And frankly, I feel like that's not that much different from what the fans are seeing right now. You guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I think the fans are sort of in the same place too.
I think that sounds about right.
Me too. You know, over the winter, you know, the fact that they just weren't in on Harper and Machado, you know, and even now Keuchel and Kimbrel, you know, there's that aspect to it that was probably dragged me down more than any other winter coming into a season. Mm-hmm. But, you know, now that they're on the field and playing games and looking like they can hang in this division, you know, it's super early. Everybody's even except for the Marlins coming into tonight. You know, there's enough, you know, I think it's very easy to go through a winter and either be excited or frustrated or somewhere in between. And then they go take the field in actual games that count and you shift over to, all right, these are the guys. And if I'm rooting for one team in a sport, this is the whole concept. Like these are the dudes on this baseball team. You know, I'm pulling for them because, you know, that's where we all end up once the season's underway. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I won't be shocked if they win the division. I won't be shocked if they finish fourth. And, I think that's been a pretty common take around this team and this division.
Yeah. And you know, there's an excitement to that because it's not crazy to see the upside of that, right? And again, I think whenever something's a little bit different, there's just naturally more intrigue in it. I mean, Brody's done a bunch of little things where it's like very clear that organization is in a different place and is being managed by somebody different. Not totally, right? They're owned by the same people and they will be for a long time. But, you know, I think there's clearly a footprint that Brody's got there. That's obvious. I mean, here's one, like this total little rando thing that from the other day. I came to recover the first game against the Twins, and I'm going to go grab game notes in the press box, and there's like three boxes of Dunkin' Donuts sitting there. And I figured out maybe that's like some, you know, writer brought it in. But I noticed it on opening day, too. But again, like in spring training, there's someone at SNY, a really good dude, would just do that for the press room. Well, anyway, I figured that was probably him again, which is unusual because, again, that was a spring thing. I saw Brody in the clubhouse after that first game against Minnesota. He was walking by and he's kind of, you know, I was saying something to one of the writers, but there's a group of us there. And he's like, hey, by the way, you guys get the first game of the series donuts? So, first game of the series, nice. So we bring them up there for you guys. So it's like that's like a totally small random thing, but I also think it's sort of telling in that, you know, I think having known Brody a little bit as an agent as well, he's obviously somebody who's good with people. I wrote a story a few years back where I went out with Cespedes to go golfing. Brody was there, you know, golfing too. And I remember thinking to myself then, like, you know, I can see why this guy is an agent. He's great with people. He's comfortable with all kinds of different conversations from different perspectives. Like, it was an interesting thing to see. So it's interesting to see that translating to his time as a GM now, whether that's just dealing one-on-one with him or even something like bringing donuts for the press box to start the new series. I thought that was interesting. I didn't know if he was joking or not. But I have noticed him there, you know, twice now. Again, opening day and the first game of the Twins series. So I guess we'll see how long that lasts, too, especially when the coverage turns if the team doesn't do so well. Wonder if the donuts keep coming in July.
Before we let you go, is there one player on the Mets this year, a young player, a new player, or even a returning player, that you think is going to have just a phenomenal year this year outside of Jacob DeGrom?
Well, I'm just going to go and take the obvious, easy answer and say your first baseman, right? I mean, Pete, a lot like when I went to go cover the Yankees last year, and I had been away, obviously, for the 5 years on the Mets. I remember being just blown away by how much power Aaron Judge had. You know, like you don't need stat tests to see it. Just, I mean, watching him take a round of BP and, you know, he's just got power. And it's obvious why he's enormous. But he's also, you know, worked very hard to make good contact and be a good hitter and all those things. Pete Alonso hitting that ball out in center field at Marlins Park was jaw-dropping. And, you know, I think obviously people do hit for power. But seeing him do it, you know, in spring, you know, watch him hit in spring, like, you know, you've seen him in the cage. But then I remember watching that Marlins game on TV, right? And then I've watched a couple games at Citi Field where he's, you know, done his thing. It's like, wow, that's in the same class as Aaron Judge, in damn near. I mean, it's, you know, and he's not as big, obviously, but, like, he's certainly got the pop. So that's eye-opening. You know, like this guy has just got insane, crazy power, which people knew. But I feel like when you start to see it translate, when you're facing actual pitchers and the lights are on, well, that's a whole different thing altogether. And we've seen that. So that is awfully impressive. So I'll take the easy answer and say Pete Alonso.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. so, yeah. At this point, we're going to let you go. Enjoy your time being at home. But to everybody who's listening, I think most of you are probably already following on Twitter, but it's at Mark Carrig, MarcCarrig, for anybody who's who's not familiar with or you know, mastered the spelling. But yeah, so check Mark out on Twitter. He's at The Athletic. We, you know, then really, I think we can speak on behalf of a lot of the listeners and certainly the folks who write for the site. You know, congrats again on the promotion there. And, you know, there's quite a few names there who people have seen, you know, in a lot of outlets for a long time who are doing, you know, who are your peers now at that at this point. So, yeah. It's cool to see. So we're happy. And Brian, anything else?
I was just gonna say we do miss you on the Mets beat though. So
yes.
You know, don't forget about us little folks now that you're a big shot.
Well, first of all, like no big shot stuff there because I don't know what I'm doing. And second of all, you know, man, I can't believe I'm saying this for the record, but I do miss Mets Twitter a little bit. I do.
Nice.
It was fun. It was fun. And, you know, like I said, it is an honor to write for a fan base that cares very passionately about its team. It was very hard not to respect that. And, you know, it was a ton of fun. And, you know, in this gig, like, I get to write about the Mets again. So that's cool. Yeah, not like it was back in the day, but, you know, I do look forward to being around there a little bit more. And, you know, if you'd let this one in here too, I'll see Green Man in hell. Thank you. I hope you're listening, Green Man.
Well, folks, that does it for another installment of Amazing Avenue in Conversation. Thank you for joining us. Make sure to follow Mark on Twitter and read his work at The Athletic. He is truly one of the best baseball writers working today. You can find lots more Mets content at AmazingAvenue.com. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Amazing Avenue. Subscribe to this show in Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, your podcatcher of choice, and make sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Those things really do help. You can follow Chris and myself on Twitter. Chris is at Chris McShane. I am at Brian Needs a Nap. And until next time, let's go Mets.
My name is Spencer Hall.
My name is Jason Kirk.
My name is Ryan Nanny.
And when we combine, we form
the Shutdown Fullcast.
Voltron!
I keep telling you, we're not Voltron.
The Shutdown Fullcast is technically a college football podcast, but it's also a show about
lawn care disasters,
regional grocery stores we love,
Tennessee Batman,
homeowners associations,
bears in video games,
Pittsburgh Batman,
the hell of being trapped in a group text,
unreliable legal advice.
I mean, there's also some actual football discussion, like about coaches having huge contracts, or coaches making terrible decisions, or coaches saying really stupid things.
Or the NCAA saying really stupid things.
Yeah, there's lots of stupid things in this big, dumb, beautiful sport.
Like the time Arkansas decided to use a captured feral hog as a mascot, and it escaped, and it wound up killing 7 rattlesnakes, a pig, and a coyote.
Sometimes we talk about football games.
Allegedly.
If you want to take college football exactly as seriously as it deserves to be taken, come find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever else you listen to podcasts like this one.
The Shutdown Fullcast.
It's not Voltron.
Unless it is.
Damn it, Ryan.
Hello, it's me, Ashley Carmen.
And I'm Caitlin Tiffany.
And we are the hosts of the Verge's podcast, Why'd You Push That Button?
It's a show that asks the hard, weird, occasionally dumb questions about how your tiny tech decisions impact your social life.
So we're asking questions like, how do you choose your skin tone emoji? And why do you delete your tweets?
Every episode, we talk to both users and experts to get to the bottom of these questions that we're confronted with every day.
Check it out. Subscribe to Why'd You Push That Button on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or anywhere else you love to get podcasts.